Hello and welcome back to another edition of Aster's Economic Week in Review. Today is December 31st. Happy New Year's Eve. This will be a shortened version of our podcast with our guest, Nick Porter. And today we're going to kind of follow the format at the beginning, talking about labor markets, what's happening in the overall trend of the economy. And then we're really going to kind of segue on to a couple new topics that Nick wanted to address. So Nick, welcome aboard. We went over your background briefly a couple weeks ago when you're on the podcast, but can you run us through real quick just your professional career so far and what you're doing in the academic world as well?
Yeah, so I started at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York in an international affairs department, covering mostly emerging market countries, and then moved to Aster. Gosh, it's been almost 2.5 years now. Really driven by Aster's approach to economic data fundamentals.
And then, Nick, you also are active in the academic world as well.
That's right. Yeah, I'm an associate at Columbia University where I teach data science and R programming.
Excellent. For our listeners, sometimes if you see various writings on our website, whether it's blogs or updates, Nick typically has a hand in a good amount of those correspondences. So Nick, we usually start the podcast off with the labor market, jobless claims, et cetera, and kind of John's big picture. Why don't you take the reins here and kind of tell us what you're seeing week over week, if there's anything interesting, and then segue into the jobs market or the labor market.
Yeah, so putting on my John Eckstein hat, I think he would say, and I would agree, that as goes the pandemic, so goes the U.S. economy. So we've seen cases begin to spike, although they're slowing, the rate of growth is slowing in some places. And correspondingly in the economy, we've seen pockets of weakness in the labor market, but also in some of the data that we monitor that's a little bit more high frequency, things like TSA clearances or restaurant bookings. And that makes sense to the extent that pandemic is spiking. There's been lockdowns throughout the economy and correspondingly weaker economic growth.
And we were chatting before we hit record here, and we were kind of talking about the notable data points week over week, right? And it's a quiet week. We're recording here on New Year's Eve, December 31st. And you kind of mentioned that the initial jobless claims and ongoing insurance claims are the only two data points that really kind of stuck out. Is there anything notable there?
I think it is notable in the fact that they actually declined, which was not my expectation, I think, based on...
And by declining, we're saying it's a good thing, right? Less people filing for first-time unemployment insurance than what was expected and week over week.
Exactly right. So the survey expectation was for 835,000 for initial jobs claims, up from 806,000. So I was a bit surprised by the decline this week. It did include the week of Christmas, and adjustments are a bit tricky around this time of year. But in combination with the lower continuing claims number as well, I think it's a positive sign, particularly when considered relative to the path of the virus and corresponding restrictions that I mentioned.
Yeah, and we'll have to see. You know, John's usually pretty good about talking about seasonally adjusted and kind of why the data might come in as an outlier week over week, right? So you had a holiday season. I'm in California right now where there's, significant shutdowns. I live in Illinois where there's significant shutdowns. So I guess we'll have to see if this is a beginning of a better trend in terms of less people filing for unemployment, or if this is just an outlier due to holiday events and things of that nature.
That's right. So we have non-farm payrolls next week, and that will certainly get to the heart of it. I think the expectation right now is around 70,000. Net gain, which is quite small, but it's certainly better than the negative number that I think some quarters are expecting.
Yeah. So Nick, from here, I kind of want to segue into an area of the podcast that we've not ventured down, and that's because you haven't been on the podcast. So John and I talk a lot about what John reads. Everyone has their own sources of information and places they go to read. Is there anything that, as you are an avid listener of the podcast, is there anything that we don't talk about that is on your radar on a month over month? And they can be longer term data points or even higher frequency. What are you seeing out there that we haven't talked about in the podcast?
Yeah, well, seeing as this is year end, I thought we could examine some of the political economy lessons from COVID-19. Bloomberg Economics has an interesting note out on that topic. So I thought I would share some of their findings. How does that sound?
All right. Floor is yours.
So if you picture a graph with GDP growth on the y-axis and deaths per capita from COVID on the x-axis, your unconditional expectation is probably that a country can reach the bottom left quadrant, meaning deeply negative GDP growth and low COVID deaths from large lockdowns, or the top right quadrant with less negative GDP growth or maybe positive GDP growth and high deaths per capita resulting from small lockdowns. So for example, the US is in the top right quadrant and Australia is in the bottom left. There's also a segment of countries in the bottom right quadrant, like Spain and the UK, that did pretty poorly on both measures, meaning neither protecting the economy or the public health well. But then there's also a segment of countries like Japan, South Korea, Germany, and China that succeeded on both fronts. So what the authors of this note discover is that we can rule out development level, proxied by GDP per capita, as well as healthcare quality as mitigating factors for per capita deaths. What did seem to be supportive, with some exceptions, is less democratic systems of government. And then in terms of GDP growth throughout the pandemic...
Go into that. What do you mean by less democratic of the government? What was that correlating to?
That's correlating to a mitigating factor for per capita COVID deaths. And so you can sort of intuitively understand why that might be, right? That more authoritarian systems of government might have the capacity or the wherewithal or more compliant populations to have quick lockdowns and very stringent lockdowns in the beginning of the pandemic, rather than some of these half measures that have been less supportive of tampering down.
COVID. Got it.
And then moving away from the death per capita, if you look at the GDP growth throughout the pandemic, countries that did better had two characteristics. One was smaller service sectors. And again, that sort of makes intuitive sense, right? Less hospitality, less restaurants as a percentage of GDP. And those are really impacted most directly by the shutdown. And the other one that they had, interestingly, was higher trust in government. And that might be a proxy for more effective government, meaning that if people trust the government's more likely to be quite good at what they're doing. And therefore, they might be able to ameliorate some of the effects of lockdowns. Mm. And so that was an interesting note. We can share the link for all of you, but it certainly bears keeping in the back of your mind as we move into 2021 with the pandemic still going
on. Aside from being like a backseat driver, what can we gather from this, right? Is it just lessons to be learned for the next pandemic, or is it ways that we should be adapting to treat the pandemic as we, you know, head into what is hopefully the final stage? Or is it simply just interesting information and that we need to be aware of?
I think it's interesting information. Part of the debate that's been going on in academia is that countries like China that are more authoritarian sort of have this new way of thinking about not just governance, but also the economy and how they manage the economy with sort of a state-led model. And so if you are a fan or supporter of democracy, as I am, this sort of some of the causal factors that they've teased out here in this study might be a little bit concerning, that things like a more authoritarian system allows governments to respond better to crisis situations like a pandemic.
Yeah, so we'll post that link on the site. And if you have any questions, you can always email us at info@asterim.com. Nick is always open to taking questions and hopping on calls. Nick, what else are you seeing out there? Anything else?
I think that's it for me, Mac. I've got some pickles to make for the New Year's party with myself and my wife and no one else. So I think we'll leave it there.
All right. Well, thanks for joining for this shortened version of the podcast. If you have any feedback on what you like to hear, right, whether it's guests that John bring on, whether it's more Nick, more John, Rob's always on Non-Farm Payroll Fridays, which is, I believe, next week, right, Nick?
That's correct.
Yeah. So we're always open to suggestions. Thank you. Happy New Year. Be safe. And until next week. Bye. See you, Nick.
Thanks, Mac.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.